Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to the Bunker Show, coming to you live and direct from our bunker hidden deep, deep, deep beneath the sewers of Westminster. And joining us tonight, we're very grateful to have our own big silly grin, and not even a car crash can stop her being here. Here's Helen.
Good evening all. Yeah, I didn't crash my car, somebody crashed into me. But anyway, I'm alive and kicking and looking forward to tonight's show. It's going to be an awesome one. Come and join me in the chat room, because otherwise, you know, these rebels just get too much for me, so I need some help. And you can interact with the show, ask any questions you like.
Hey, and as always, our very own Green Hour of Inquiry riding shotgun tonight. Here's Jimmy.
Yeah, brilliant, as always, to be here. And yeah, you know, like, it was nice to visit Legal Land last week, but it's also nice to touch down here.
Back in the bunker, and we've got a great guest this evening. She's part of the Dark City family. She's been the host of the I Am show, and she really helps people to help themselves, which is what she did for me when I first started the Bunker Show, with some support and advice and some great ways to look out for me. So, Sarah, good evening and welcome to the bunker.
Hello, and thank you very much, Fabrice. It's great to be here. I've got to admit, I'm a bit nervous for some reason, but I am. But hello, everyone.
Hey there. It's really great to have you on the show, Sarah. And it, you know, it's one of those things was nerves that I spoke to you about when I first started the Bunker Show. And you know, I think it's one of those things. If we be ourselves and do what we're here to do, then you know, hopefully it all gets easier. So, Sarah, how did you get started doing what you're doing, and you know, how did you become a part of the Dark City family?
How did I become part of the Dark City family? I'll answer that question. First off, me and Paul Hayden, who is one of the main, I nearly said instigators, but one of the main founding members of the Dark City Radio. I've actually known him for about 15 years, but it's been 15 years for the last 5 years, so maybe it's a bit longer than that, I'm not really sure. But I've known him for quite a long time, and that was through energy work that we both used to do together. Not actually together, but workshops that we used to go on, the same workshops, and I got to know him through that. And I stayed in contact with him ever since. And when he started doing the radio, I started listening and supporting, and he'd ask questions and I would answer them on Facebook or other areas and do a little bit of research. And then I slowly started phoning up and joining in the Skype. And then I decided to do my own radio show, but it's basically because I've known Paul for so long, really, that I've been involved in Dark City, really. You go back a while.
Hey, and so what was the genesis of the idea to do the show?
Well, I wanted the thing I thought of was what inspires people to get up in the morning, because I suffer from depression myself. I don't like using the word suffer, but I do get depressed myself. And you know, and before I started doing the Dark City Radio, I was pretty down in a lot of ways. I was getting more active and doing a few more things, but I was struggling with life in general due to some of the events which have occurred in my life. And probably as well because of my mentality, the way I view the world sometimes. So I was thinking, what inspires people to get up in the morning? What inspires you to do the things that you do? You know, inspiration, something to help, you know, no, I don't like using the word help, but something to assist people to be able to work through their issues. So, you know, we decided to, I originally started with my mate, with my friend Terry, who I've actually been speaking to today on the phone, beautiful woman who does herb. He's got great knowledge in herbs. So me and Terry originally were started to do it, and I thought it'd be a good idea if we look at an emotion. So we look at something like fear or gratitude, and mm-hmm. we look at a different emotion, and then how you work through it or how you achieve it, you know. So what is fear, and looking at that, so it just so that other people can realise that we're all pretty similar. We all have a lot of the same fears. We all have a lot of the same issues. And just by sharing them and expressing them, it becomes less. And you can share ways of moving through them. And
so, for example, with depression, if you find that, you know, one thing that helped me when I wasn't feeling so bright was I go out for a walk and change my environment and look after myself. So, when you have a space where you can explore or meditate on those things, sometimes you can get a new awareness of them, because that's the remarkable thing that makes the show so unique is that space to be human and share the human experience and the insights that come from that. So was that what you were looking to set out with the show?
Yeah, it is exactly what I was looking at to set out for the show, and also to encourage other people to talk about things. And so I've had quite a few guests come on the I Am show, and quite a few sort of co-hosts as well, people that have come on, and we basically, some of the stories that people tell are, you know, I've had one of my friends telling me about the story about her child, how her child was abused and how she's dealt with it. And it's one of the most poignant ones that I remember doing, because she talked about it so openly, and it's a space where we can talk about things so openly. And she expressed how she felt guilty, and and how she worked through that. And so all these normal feelings that people have with these massive tragedies or events that happen in your life, you know, you think, all right, so I feel this and I feel that, and so do they. So that's okay. It's just a normal part of the process, the healing process, the process of going through a traumatic event, you know. It is really a show about sharing and a safe space to be able to speak. And it's funny because a lot of people, well, I talk about myself, but a lot of people think I'm talking about them, you know?
Yeah.
And that's one of the good things about it, is so many people can actually relate to it.
Yeah. And I guess sometimes it also shows sort of insight, you know, for example, if people are feeling guilty, you know, I know that once you have an understanding of what guilt is, so that you understand and you learn the lesson from it, and then you can release from it, and you can let go of that, having gained the experience from it, you know. So do you find that being able to look at some of those sort of universal human sort of insights for, you know, caring, compassionate people often coming up against, you know, difficult and challenging situation in the 21st century.
Do I find it what?
Do you find it can uncover some insights? Do you think that people can gain an understanding of you know, what the nature of guilt is, or what the nature of fear is, and with understanding it become, you know, less of a challenge in their life?
Well, the idea of the I Am show as well is to discover self. And to discover self is to peel back all these damaged layers that we put on ourselves over time. And guilt is one of those damaged layers that we damaged responses. It's not a natural sort of emotional feeling. In the sense, it's not one of the ones that we use for survival. Yeah, I suppose in some ways it is for survival, actually, because if you feel, because it's kind of, if you hurt your colleague or you hurt part of your team members, then you're going to feel guilt. So it's actually is, I suppose, a survival technique. And so it kind of puts things into perspective as well, you know, as to why, you know, the bare basics as to why you feel these things, and that it's normal and it's natural. And one of the main things about with the I Am show is learning to feel these emotions and these feelings, but to let them go. And so it's and when you can actually master the technique, and I haven't always mastered it. Sometimes I can do it brilliantly, and other times I do struggle. But, you know, you can actually feel these emotions and feelings come towards you. You can feel yourself feeling them, and then you can feel them let go. But it's almost like a gust of wind when you've got it right. You know, it's almost like it comes in like a breeze, and then it goes. And these sort of techniques, letting things flow, are really, rather than holding on to them and using them, emotions and feelings and all that are tools, amazing tools. You know, if you're not happy, then you need to change something, don't you? And that, yeah. What you need.
I was going to say, Sarah, you know, like, would you agree that it's not so much about whitewashing memories, but, you know, like actually taking them as a learning experience and kind of almost like signposts of roads taken before?
Well, I think so. I don't think you can whitewash over anything. I think if you whitewash over something, you're not dealing with it, are you? And I always think that it's, well, I do the best that I can. I can only talk from personal experience, and that's what the I Am show is about. But I can only, you know, if I experience grief, then I'm going to be grief. If I'm sad, anyone who knows me, if I'm sad and I feel like crying, I will cry. I will let my emotions and feelings out there and then on the spot. You know, I've learnt to do that with time. I've learnt to express myself without fear of offending as well, because I used to be so scared of offending. The I Am shows, I've grown so much. It's done so much for me to, you know, because I can't just talk about things. I have to do the best I can to walk my talk, you know, and otherwise it's just shallow, isn't it?
Yeah, and it also, when it's not real, it can't do what it does by example, by sharing, because actually what you're sharing isn't genuine. You know, I think with the I Am show, because of that, actually it empowers people, because it's very easy to think when you're depressed or when you're guilt-ridden or when you're ashamed that actually you're the only one and you're not really sure how to communicate about it. And, you know, the I Am show is very rare in that way, because it is that feedback loop occurring. And sometimes, you know, the shows in the archives can be really quite interesting to catch when you have grief come into your life, or when you are having, you know, challenges with moving on or abandonment, or, you know, how to assert yourself without upsetting people.
Exactly, and that's the idea of it. It's just sharing, really. It's sharing my journey. Most of my shows are actually the subject a lot of the time is something that I'm actually going through myself. Like I did a show on vulnerability, and that's one of the worst shows I've ever done. But I was very vulnerable at that particular time. And I knew that I was going to be very vulnerable then, because I'd scattered my daughter's ashes after 7 years of having them. And I'd arranged to do the vulnerability show. And so it's very intense, the I Am show, for me at times. You know, it's proper me baring my soul. And in the hope that it will actually encourage others to do it and encourage other people to be on this healing journey of self-discovery and re-establishing who you actually truly are before you ended up so broken. And I'm not saying everyone's broken, but I can be pretty broken. I'm not anywhere near as broken as when I started, but, you know, I'm still broken now. I wouldn't say that I'm not broken in any way.
I just wanted to jump in because I really love the I Am show. I quite often listen to it with the archives of it. And I really like the ones where you're talking about your stuff as much as I like the ones where, you know, you're sharing it with other guests. And what I really like is the personal responsibility that's being taken and the ability to get to the authentic person who's actually okay to be a bit broken sometimes, you know. So what, you know, it's like actually, you know, if we're aspiring for perfection, we're going to fall down a lot, you know. So it's about actually being able to share that and make other people feel okay about, you know, yeah, some bits are broken, but we're a work in progress, you know, and actually we're the ones with the power to change it. And I think it's a really great show for that, the best one I've come across.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it is. I've done one on responsibility. It is about responsibility, really. Self-responsibility. Responsibility for your own actions and the effect that you have on others, you know, and the effect that you have around you. And it's difficult a lot of the time to take total responsibility, because we learn to manipulate. We learn to lie and cheat on such small scales. Half the time we're not even noticing that we're doing it ourselves, you know, and it's amazing what we do learn, and it can be quite a difficult journey to unlearn these things and to even acknowledge that you're doing these things in the first place. I've done a show on manipulation, you know,
And to actually be able to own it once you catch yourself and deal with that, you know, but that with that comes a big sense of freedom, I think, when as you begin to learn to be able to do that.
Yeah, you begin to learn to recognize things. I find personally for me that I have a few steps. I become aware that there's this thing, then I realize that maybe I'm doing it, and then I look and I see how many ways I am doing it, which can be quite harsh sometimes because I don't want to think that. I've always thought I'm such a lovely girl, you know, so nice. But actually, when you actually start peeling back the layers, you find that you are doing things that aren't necessarily all that nice. And so it's a harsh journey, you know. But it's about forgiveness for yourself. It's about taking responsibility and knowing once you know these things, then you can do something about them. You know, then you can become more truer to the person who you actually truly are. You know, and that's all I've ever strived for in my life. You know, this has been a journey that I've been on ever since I was a kid, really. You know, this self-discovery, knowing that there's more to life and more to the world than what meets the eye. I've never been the sort of person to get up at 9 o'clock, well, not 9 o'clock, whatever time people get up, and go to work for 9 and then come back at 5 and have 2.4 kids. And, you know, I've never been that kind of person, and I never will be that kind of person, because other things are more important. My own personal development is one of the most important things to me, and it has been my main goal in a lot of ways.
I was wondering before, you know, like, did the power work that you were talking about with Paul, has that come into play? The energy work that you and Paul first met doing. Has that come into play with how you approach the IM show?
Yes, it has come into play. It changed my life. There's actually quite a few of us on here today that are part of the Shambhala family. We've got Winnie, who's absolutely beautiful. I love Winnie to pieces. I don't think she's going to talk, but she's an absolutely amazing woman. She's Shambhala. Paul in Spain, he's Shambhala. And Paul in Manchester, he's Shambhala. We all are. And it's something that totally changes your life as soon as you're attuned to it. You know, I can feel energies now so really strongly. I could feel energies before, but not to the same extent. It kind of takes, you know, the only rule with Shambhala is that there's no rules. You know, and it kind of gives you, breaks through a lot of the stuff, cuts away a lot of the ties. It becomes part of your life, part of who you are. It's not something you can separate that you just bring out every now and again to share with somebody. It becomes part of you.
And do you find that as you look at the things that you do on the I Am show, that the perspective you have changes? And the ability to, I guess, understand other perspectives changes.
Yeah, it can do. Sometimes I feel like I should go back and listen to some of the shows because, you know, it's sometimes I sit there and I'll say something and I'm not actually putting it into play myself. So it's, you know, every time I listen to them, I learn something new from them myself. It's almost like, because I don't often prepare, sometimes I prepare a few notes, but it's almost like channeling when I do an I Am show. It's all, you know, it's what comes to me at that given moment that I express or talk about in the moment. So, you know, it's I'm talking to myself a lot of the time, you know.
Yeah. So I guess, you know where the wave's going, but you're not exactly quite sure how you're going to surf it until you get there at the time.
Yeah.
And while you've been talking, we had some lovely feedback for you from the chat room. There's cupcakes in there, and she said that you empowered her to get up and heal herself and heal others as she is doing.
Wow. Amazing. I love that. I don't get a lot of feedback, so it's really beautiful when I do get feedback. But
oh, Sarah, then keep coming, everyone. Keep it coming in. We need to big up Sarah.
I'm all right.
We all find it hard to take, though, don't we?
Yeah, I'm not very good at it.
You don't want to sit here and be complimented for an hour, do you?
No.
it is an interesting, you know, an interesting thing, you know, is sort of talking about the ego in some ways, because, you know, some people can have very inflated egos. You need an ego to do something before you've done it. So if you think you're going to run this race so fast, you need to see it in your mind's eye. You need to see it in your imagination so that you do your best to, you know, to achieve that target, you know, sort of, I guess, no matter what it is. And I, you know, that's a function of the ego, I guess, whether that's real, a real ego, or whether it's, you know, whether it's a false ego. You know, I guess it is, you know, how close it's based to reality, you know.
What is reality?
Right.
Well, there's so many, isn't there? How many perspectives can you hold at once? You know, there's so many realities.
Yeah, but I've done a show on the ego. I did a show on the ego when I was being in a bit of my ego and wanting to learn a bit more about ego. I always thought ego was just an overinflated personality, but actually it's not. There's a lot more to ego than that. It's a lot more sneaky, very sneaky ego.
Yeah, well, it's a part of us that kind of will go to whatever lengths it needs to get its own needs met, you know, or ourselves needs met, isn't it? It's kind of, and within that are so many little manipulative and controlling behaviours that we don't know we're doing. So yeah. It's quite a work in progress to even start it. And, you know, sometimes you get a little bit along the way and go, oh, my God. You know?
Yeah.
I wonder if that ego business is all a part of some old survival instinct, you know, like part of some sort of evolutionary trend, or if it's kind of environmental, and if we take away the external factors that really suck our energy, you know, like, would it be a different ballpark?
It's insecurities, isn't it? I see it as basing sort of starts of insecurities of people feeling that they've got to do something to fit in or be part of something, or that they're going to be better liked or better successful, and then they set up programs to maintain the way that they feel that they need to be. And these programs can last lifetimes, even though they're actually outmoded, because you can start these programs when you're young kids.
Yeah, I mean, it just sounded like you described mainstream media, you know, like the messages are just constant and people are put into this almost like constant survival mode. So it's very difficult, don't you reckon? You know, like, apart from safe spaces like the I Am show, for people to have a moment and just go, oof, this is me, this is how I feel.
Oh, yeah, totally, totally. People are running in flight or fight mode all the time. I was, and when I did my hair mineral analysis, and when I got that back, I could see the stress that my adrenal system was under. And a lot of people are living under immense stress that they don't have time to be themselves. They don't, you know, life is so structured. People don't know how to be themselves anymore. You know, there's all this conforming. You have to go to work and you have to behave a certain way every day because you're at work, and you can't say what you want to say because you'll get sacked. You can't, you know what I mean? People aren't free anymore, aren't themselves anymore, aren't able to express themselves. And people get so stuck in that they don't know how to be themselves anymore. And really, that's really terrible sickness of our society, you know.
I think the obedience training that goes on in state school systems is pretty you know, it kind of readies you for it, doesn't it? It takes all that away and gets you into that conforming mode.
I don't know, it never worked on me.
No, but that's what it seems to be trying to drill into people, you know.
Yeah,
that's what I see. It's exactly. A sort of a, you know, ready for the workforce type, you know. You're here to follow rules and do what you're told. But no, there's some of us it just doesn't quite wash on.
Yeah, it's sad. It's sad what's happened in society, you know, because we're all beautiful. And one of the things that I always sort of talk about as well is that when in a lot of ancient cultures, and not only ancient cultures, you know, I've heard people talking about this in sort of thing in modern day society, children used to sort of be watched by the elders. We used to watch the children, and you could see what their natural talents were, their natural personalities. And this is what was encouraged to come out within children. And they was put into specific roles, depending, not all cultures, obviously, depending on their natural talents. You know, and they was encouraged to develop, because that's how people inspire. That's how people can contribute the most beautiful things ever, is by being themselves, being free to be themselves, rather than feeling the need to do something for others. You know, it's people have lost a lot of self-worth, a lot of self-love, and, you know, it's...
Yeah, and I think, too, also, you know, you think back, like you were saying, in ancient civilizations, that they had a real value for culture, didn't they?
Yeah, and self, I think, itself, you know, and that everyone's important. And when you live in a community as well, people are a lot more accepting. You know, it's easy to be accepting of people when you live in a community, because you know, well, he might have that funny habit, she might just do that thing that's a bit funny, you know, and people are a lot more understanding, not understanding because that's not a very good word, but people are lot more accepting of each other and each other's quirks. You know, when we're better able to manage to work through disruptions or arguments or anything like that, because people loved each other more. Because you, when you live in a community, you get to know more. And I get glimpses of that by when I hang out with the new age travelers. You know, living in community and the acceptance of each other. And the way that you look out for the family or the friends, and you know, the way you look out for each other, a lot of that's gone in society.
Tribe,
so many
tribe that look out for each other. Yeah, it's hard to find these days.
Yeah,
and the thing is, you were talking about the quirks, because what you get to appreciate is the qualities, isn't it? When you're all helping each other get by, you know, the qualities usually outweigh the quirks, and everything works out, you know, stronger. And we can learn a lot from what irritates us with others anyway, because it's something about ourselves usually.
Yeah, totally.
It's interesting you mentioned reality earlier, because it in quite a few ways, you know, in terms of community, I guess reality is, you know, what the community makes it. They become co-creators of their own destinies. So, you know, if you have an idea or a project, be it a holiday or a party or a radio show, then you take your idea, your imagination, you hopefully get the tools, the ingredients of what's required to make it so, and see if other people can, you know, share your vision to make it so. So I guess in some ways, when we empower each other, we become co-creators of our own realities, I guess.
Well, yeah, you know, I like working with as many people that are as empowered as possible, you know. I the idea of people becoming more empowered and more self-aware, to me, is amazing. It's what it's all about, you know, is that with people, you know. It's sad that so many people aren't these days, you know, and it's not an easy journey, but it's a journey well worth walking on, you know. I feel great today. If you look at me last year, I wasn't as great as what I am this year. But, you know, it's important that we have that self-love, and that's what empowerment is, really. It's self-love, you know. Love yourself. You can't get away from yourself. You are the only person that you're ever going to have a relationship from the before the day you're born to after the day you die. You know what I mean? There's no getting away from you. So you've got to build that relationship into one that is of love and liking and a strong one, because if you're not, you're going to be making the wrong decisions. Your life is just going to get harder and harder, and you're going to get stuck in cycles and behavioral patterns. And that's another thing I used to talk about quite a lot, is behavioral patterns and dramas and things like that on the I Am show, because they all have such an impact on our lives, you know. It's very important to stand in your own power, not to be powerful over others, but to stand in your own power.
Well, I remember, you know, it's really interesting you're talking about, you know, relationships and such and dramas. It's funny, you know, I remember seeing a Richard D. Hall program where he was talking about how the, say, shows like EastEnders and Hollyoaks and such, they're all kind of so overwrought and dire, and just they don't equate to, you know, they don't really provide a very, you know, like, positive role model for, you know, like a bright existence, do they?
What's wrong with Dirty Dan, eh?
But he's like, I know, it's funny when you think about it, but it just seems to be that, you know, there's this message out there that, you know, like, life has to be droll.
Yeah, well, the soaps, you know, I don't have a TV. I don't watch, well, I've got a TV, but it's my computer monitor. I don't watch TV. I don't watch soaps. I used to be addicted to soaps at one point, but it's all part of, I'm going to say it, but it's all part of the mass brainwashing of society, isn't it? You know, the Tavistock Institute basically dictates what happens in these soaps, what sort of storylines they're going to have. And that's what it is. They don't care about people, really. They just want to care about ratings. And people seem to like misery, I suppose. I'm not quite sure. I think maybe because a lot of the time their lives aren't fulfilling for themselves, and maybe watching the soaps might make it ease a bit. It's a bit mind-numbing as well, and there's something very addictive about soaps, because like I said, I used to be addicted, and it's part of one of the reasons why I don't have a TV anymore, because I just used to watch all the shit. Yeah, and it's so easy to just sit in front of it and watch it week in, week out. And you work out how many hours of your life is spent being brainwashed by the Tavistock industry. It's institute. It's
quite, they don't call it programming for nothing.
No.
Yeah, we had Neil Sanders on the Bunker Show a couple of months ago, and he went into the distraction techniques and how they're almost hypnotically designed, so that you become drawn to them. And in a lot of ways, if you can be distracted by somebody else, a fictional character's personal life, then again, you don't think of the stresses on your own personal life. Maybe to quite a degree that you can actually move towards a resolution of some of them.
Yeah, and it takes your mind off of things as well, I suppose. It's something to do. You know, a lot of people come back from work exhausted and they'll sit down in front of the TV, put their feet up, watch some soaps. You know, and that time could be spent with your family. It could be spent communicating and working through your issues, or if you know, it could be spent so much more productively. It's a proper drain. I don't like mainstream media at all, really. It's
and not, do you think that the I Am show would be a counterbalance to that kind of social engineering and conditioning, because it's actually not detached from, you know, who's engaging with it, because it's you know, with some of the interviews you actually find the real people. And I was trying to think back, you know, thinking about today's shows. When was the last time I actually caught a really decent interview with, you know, a real person that actually goes into the human elements on the mainstream? And I, you know, it's many, many decades ago. So, you know, do you feel that things like the I Am show and those types of honest in human engagements are a kind of counterbalance to the programming, as we were saying, of the mainstream?
Yeah, I do reckon it, that it is. It does give people an insight into, like I say, into self-discovery, really. So, and bringing focus back onto self, you know, and that's always another one of the main points with the I Am show. You know, if you're too busy focusing on other people and other people's lives, or whether it be EastEnders' life, Coronation Street's life, you know, you're not actually sorting your own stuff out. You're not developing yourself, and you're not getting to the places where you want to be, or you're not even being content in the moment, which is even more important than striving to get to the places where you want to be. You know, being content in the moment is really what we're striving for, really. And I think, like, it's pretty sad the amount of TV and everything that does get watched. I remember reading in a paper, a mainstream paper, that Bob the Builder was more familiar to some children than their own fathers. And I think that's pretty sad, man.
Yeah, that's a really quite a concerning indictment, I guess, in quite a lot of ways.
Well, it's an interesting one, isn't it? Because, you know, like, when you think about it, you know, what you're actually doing with shows like the I Am Show, and hopefully kind of what we're doing with the Bunker Show, is breaking, like, the media fourth wall and actually projecting empathy out there. It's almost a physical thing, isn't it?
I'm not projecting anything out there, but not if I can help it. But it's showing people a different reality, isn't it? The more real reality. It's given people another option, isn't it? And it's given that people, I suppose, like some have said, the inspiration to actually put that focus on themselves, to achieve the things that they want to achieve, to be inspired by you lot doing this show, to actually think, yeah, I can get up and do that. And it's so good when you can actually look at other people and be inspired as well, is another thing that I think is beautiful, because a lot of people look at people and they feel all these things like jealousy, or, you know, they try and destroy it because they haven't got it. And these are other aspects that I've looked at in the I Am show, you know. And if you do that, then if you do try and destroy things, or you do get jealous, it's, again, it's a lack of self-worth. And most of it just boils down to lack of self-worth. And once you can get that and acknowledge that and recognize that and do something about it, you know, then, again, you're more likely to live in a world where you up your mates, where everyone around you starts doing better, because you've got that focus on yourself. You've got that focus on doing what you want to be doing and what you need to be doing. And it's contagious.
And I mean,
it certainly is, yeah. And I get that. The more you do, the more you want to do, isn't it? And it's just sort of builds. And I think often the action brings on more motivation is often the way with things that you're passionate about.
And do you think it's a worthwhile thing to do to, you know, to make that time to look at yourself and how well you work or how well you work at being yourself?
I think without it, you're bimbling along in life a bit lost unless you've already got it. You know, some people have got that knack anyway. They don't need to do the work necessarily, while other people have to do a lot more. But like I said, you know, the quality of life that you have in each and every given moment, when you do put that focus on yourself, your quality of time, everything improves. So, yeah, I would encourage everybody to do it, really. Everyone to turn their telly off and start following and doing the things that they want to do, what makes them happy, even if it's just a little bit at a time, even if it's just for 5 minutes at the end of a long day or 10 minutes, to start doing those things that you love and you want to be doing. And the more you do it, the more opportunities will be created for you. Energy goes where focus is, you know, as something like that the saying is. And it's so true, you know, where you put your focus, that's where your energy is going to go. So if you put your focus all the time on your work, you're going to get a bit neglected in your own personal life. If you put too much focus on your partner, you're going to become suffocating to your partner. You know, so it's if you don't do this, then you end up suffering one way or another anyway, I think. And I think everybody does it, but to different degrees, you know. Some people do believe that they've got no chance to change. And it's not about changing. It's about understanding your triggers, so that you're no longer triggered, that you're more in control of your own life. You become more responsive rather than reactive, you know, and that's a great place. The world would be such a better place if people didn't react. They responded instead, you know, just simple little things. Yeah.
They took the time to choose how they respond rather than jumping into a program.
And with what you're focusing on growing and us being dynamic people in an ever-changing world, you know, being able to find space to be able to keep your balance is, you know, probably, you know, something which is healthy to all us human beings.
And it is, and it's a good example to leave, especially if you're a parent. You know, everyone who wants their children to be successful and happy in their life, you know, and your child's not going to learn that from you if you're not actually doing it yourself, you know. And so it's walking your talk, basically, isn't it? Do as I say, not as I do.
Yeah, right. And being an example, so that actually you don't have to shout about what you do. People can see what you do from your actions and from the way you live your life.
You feel stronger. I feel stronger. The more truer to myself that I am, the stronger I feel within myself, and the more confident I am with my abilities, and you know, the more confident I am, you know. So my ability to walk into a room of crowded people and be able to speak my truth is a lot greater now than what it was a year, 2 years, 3 years, 4 years, whatever, you know, and my confidence. And when people can hear that within you, they know that you're doing something right. They can hear truth. People can hear truth. People can hear when you speak from your heart.
And do you have it sort of more positive coincidences that kind of happen along the way?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I have rough times as well. I'm not saying my life's perfect by any means. I'm not saying that I'm totally sorted. You know, I have my ups and downs. I still get depressed. Don't get me wrong. I don't want people thinking that I'm totally sorted in every angle, because I'm not. You know. I'm just a normal human being, and that's another thing that I want, like, to be made loud and clear on the I Am show is that these people that are doing great things because they've put that focus on themselves and they've put that time and attention on themselves, and that's what it takes to achieve.
Yeah, and it's coming through loud and clear in the chat room, actually, with comments like, Sarah always walks the walk, she inspires me, always has, she has love real.
Oh, wow.
Nice things coming through, and it's true, man. You do, you will, and I really love that about you. And it's not about being perfect or having the job done. It's about being willing to learn on a daily basis and be willing to face it instead of avoid it, pretend it's not there, exactly. And have all those little ego manipulations in your life that you don't want.
Exactly, exactly. You know, exactly.
And I guess, you know, one thing that I'm still learning about, which is, you know, different ways of taking care of yourself and treating yourself as a whole being. And that seems to be quite a strong part of your ethos.
Sorry, I've missed that. Excuse me, I shouldn't cast my sorrow. What was the middle bit? I had the ethos bit. I got distracted.
Well, you know, treating oneself as a whole human being.
Mm-hmm.
No, because sometimes, as you say, we can focus on our work, or we can focus on our partners, or we can, focus on our diet, or focus on our mental health pressures, or one different element. And it seems that part of your perspective, or part of where you seem to get the greatest positive feedback, is from your approach of sort of treating a human being as a whole being, and looking at all the elements of one's life.
Well, yeah, you've got to look at the whole picture, you know. If you're just looking at part of it, you're not seeing everything, are you? So it's, yeah, definitely, it's definitely looking at everything. And thank you to the person who said those kind words about me.
Yeah, lots of lovely things going on in there. You should be in there, really. Have a look. I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, what you mentioned earlier about the hair strand test. I wanted to sort of move into what you're doing and some of the medical and holistic help you're giving people, because you help a lot of people, don't you?
I don't like the word help.
Assist or show them the teach. I don't know. What do you like?
Yeah, I give people my opinion of what they could do that maybe might be able to assist
options.
Them in some way. Yeah,
you give people options. Yeah,
I research absolutely. Into things, research into their conditions, and look to see what could help. Well, could assist and what works and stuff like that.
In
yeah.
What sort of ways can you do that for people?
Well, one of the things that I often do, I don't always do that, but people have hair strand tests, like what you're talking about. That is basically looking at the physical, you know, if your body can't work and function to its optimum, if it's lacking minerals or nutrients. So I have a look at that. And also a lot of people who aren't very well have got heavy metals in their system as well, and which also shows up in hair strand tests. So we adjust that. We look at meditations as well. We look at self-love again. You know, what can be taught and what can be learnt from the journey that they're on, you know, because some people are on pretty full-on journeys. If you've got cancer, that's a pretty full-on journey. So it's about changing the way people view the world and view themselves, and also about becoming more positive. And celebration is something that comes up quite a lot, learning to celebrate life. Something which I've been learning a lot about myself, you know, and celebrating life after, you know, things after you've done a job or you've done a task, you know, appreciating yourself like you do a little kid, you know, like you go, yeah, well done, you finished that, well done. You do that, if you carry on doing that with yourself,
it's a great substitute for sort of the depression and the low self-esteem, self-talk that a lot of people are living with constantly. You know, if you can actually learn to appreciate what you've just done, and what, like you would a friend, you know, if they've done something for you. If you can be that aware with your own self, I think it does lead to a much better sense of freedom.
Yeah, exactly. So that's it, really. I like to try and bring people back to themselves, really, like, you know, self-empowerment, really.
So you're looking at the whole mind, body, spirit as one, and trying to work with them all to get them in balance, kind of thing. Is that right?
Yeah, and exercise as well. I look into different bits of exercise depending on one of the people I work with has just gone and got himself a mini trampoline, and so he's, you know, different types of exercise which will also make the body stronger. If you can make your body more flexible as well and strong, you feel stronger within your spirit, you feel stronger within yourself. You know, and acknowledging as well the journey that they're on, so feeling the hardship as well and facing that, and learning to communicate as well. A lot of people don't communicate properly or express their emotions or feelings in a proper way, and it manifests into illness. So, you know, looking at trauma, past trauma and past experiences, and dealing with them as well is another really important part of the journey.
And would you say the things we're putting into us as well, like our food or medications or alcohol, drink and drugs or whatever we're putting into our systems plays a relevant part as well, to be more aware.
Yeah, but it all comes down to self-love again. You know, if you're not having self-love and you're not having self-worth, then you're going to eat anything, can't you? You'll go out and you'll just eat whatever, a bowl of breakfast cereal for your dinner, you know. But when you've got a lot of self-love, you'll go and get yourself some nice organic vegetables and cook yourself and put that time and effort into yourself. So I find most of everything just comes down to that one simple thing.
I think maybe there's something around the education thing as well, because you could go to your doctor and think you're getting some help and be given something that actually may not be. So it's also about, you know, being aware of what you're putting into your system in that sense as well, as thinking more of pharmaceuticals and things like that, where people may be poisoning themselves without even knowing it.
Oh, I always say, always research what you're going to take. I'm not one of these people against the pharmaceutical industry, by the way.
What I was meaning was to be an intelligent patient, you know, to ask the questions and find out before you. But I was more thinking of the process of know what you're putting in, as well as the food, with the medicines, with everything, so that you can make a conscious decision.
Research, yeah. I always encourage people to research. When people come to me and they have a diagnosis, I always tell them to research everything, including have a look at chemotherapy and research that, and have a look at all of them and see that, so that you know every single one of your options from a very educated point of view. And most people say, I still don't want it. I mean, it's just good, you know. But you've got to be educated. You've got to not just listen to fear-mongering. There's a lot of fear-mongering as far as I'm concerned on as a biologist, and looking at some of the things that people do say about pharmaceutical industries and other industries. I find it all quite scary, to be honest. I do think that you need to be educated, look properly into what you're taking, why you're taking it, what the side effects are, what other options there are for you, and be as educated as you possibly can. Don't go on fear, but look at proper resources, not Facebook, you know.
So what sort of resources do you think are the best ways? Do you think maybe professional journals can be quite useful, or do you think that you have to have a certain amount of filtering with any, or you know, because some people find it difficult to actually find the information and avoid the Facebook clutter?
Yeah, well, it's a bit difficult to say, yeah, okay, go and look at journals, because most people haven't got access to journals. So a lot of people haven't actually got access to the correct information as it is. But you can talk to people as well is another good one. But do look on sort of science-based places as well, I would say, you know, science-based sites. Proper reference sites, but talking to people as well, and talking to your doctor. Always keep a good relationship with your doctor. Keep a good relationship with a recommended alternative therapist as well, you know. And
get that's wide experience.
A lot of these natural news, for example, I've seen them put an article about zeolite on there. And zeolite's like a silicon-based, similar to clay, but it's not actually a clay. And it's basically used to detox the body. And they put an article in Natural News about zeolite, and I read it, and I thought, oh, no, this is a really – I always thought zeolite was great, and this article's telling me that it's not. So then I looked at the references of that article, and there was a natural study carried out, which the article was based on. So I thought, okay, I'll read the actual article. And this is the sort of thing I'm saying, you know. So you read the actual article, then you go and you look on and you read the references. And I read the reference, I read the article, the actual science study, and it was the total opposite to what the natural news was saying. So I'm like thinking, oh, wow, why is this then? That's a bit odd. The study is saying how well zeolite works at drawing out heavy metals and toxins out the body, and yet this natural news article is written and it's actually saying how rubbish it is, and in fact that it actually puts toxins into the body. And I'm thinking, hang, I've used zeolite with some of my clients after they've had chemotherapy, and the hair analysis results are not saying the same as what this natural news article. And it turns out the bloke who wrote the natural news article had had a falling out with somebody with a zeolite company. And so he was then writing the article from a totally biased point of view to destroy the zeolite industry. You know, and this is what I'm saying. There's so much of that going on, but luckily there was a reference for that article. So if you can reference the article, if you read something negative about it, check it in other places, check the references. Just
so follow the sources is always a good thing to do, because there's a lot of people with vested interests who may well spin against treatment or options that might be more effective for that individual.
Exactly. You know, you've always got to weigh up your options. And a lot of people are in very serious states, you know, with massive tumours just about to die. And sometimes a blast of chemotherapy might actually save them. You know, I'm not going to encourage that or encourage anybody to make any decisions through what I'm saying, but all I can ever state is you've got to do your research. And if you did go down that route, then you've got to go down, you know, it's best if you go down the route of detoxifying as well, you know. And some cancers have got different, you know, different cancers are so different and the treatments are so different. Every cancer is individual and every person's individual, and what works for some isn't going to necessarily work for the others, you know. Be as educated as you can. Don't go on fear mongering, go on fact.
And of course, and remember, you're an individual, you know, I guess, because, you know, if we are developing relationship with ourselves, if we are, you know, taking care of ourselves in the best possible way, then, you know, the physician or the cancer specialist will know their business best, but you'll probably be aware of how you're feeling. You know, so I guess it's worth remembering you're the expert on yourself.
Exactly, and you've got to give things time to work as well. Another thing that I've noticed a lot about this kind of industry that I'm now in is that people are so scared and they're constantly looking for something, you know, and they'll have a protocol and they'll start taking it for a little while and then they'll say, oh, this isn't working, I'm going on to the next one and I'm going on to the next one. And I'm sure that's part of what kills people. You know, it's about having the confidence in what you're actually doing. 90% of healing, a lot of people say, it comes from what you're thinking and what's in your heart.
You threw a word in there that is typical of, and I'm not saying you are, because we've been on for a while, and it's a pleasure to speak with you on all these issues. But usually when the word debate is thrown in there, it's usually...
Okay, we're back to normal.
I'm not sure what happened, but that, you know, most of the, it's about 90% what you're feeling in your heart and what you're feeling in your head. So
if you believe you're getting well, that's a huge step towards the process, isn't it? And if you're doing all the right steps, you know, it's much easier. Because I've had periods of illness where I've kind of thought, oh my God, this is really bad, I'm going to die. And I've got iller and iller and iller. And times where I've, you know, really taken care of myself and felt, you know, actually... Yeah, and I've got better, you know, and, you know, actually my self-talk improving was the best thing for my health, I think.
And there's an interesting study done by the Maryland Research Institute on placebos, where they gave different people water tablets and told them they might possibly be a cure for their condition. And they had tumors the size of golf balls disappear just off and using suggestion. And people obviously having a more positive attitude towards themselves and their health, thinking that this water tablet will actually make them healthy and thus stimulating their immune system to be able to actually make a tumor disappear. The results there were quite interesting, and it's a study that made me think that it's always worth thinking positively when it comes to taking care of oneself and empowering oneself to be the remarkable human being that we are.
Yeah, and it's also about seeing the positivity. You know, when people are very ill, they find it hard a lot of the time to be positive. And when you say, oh, all you've got to do, come on, be positive, they feel like slapping you. You know, so it's... Looking outside my window at the moment, I can see my cherry blossom in the garden, blossoming on my tree. That's positivity. That's beauty. And it's about that as well, looking at the beauty that is around us, the simple beauty, the simple little things. You know, nothing big, nothing miraculous, just the simple little beautiful pleasures that are on this earth right now. You know, the daisy cracking through the growing through the crack in the pavement, how strong and fragile and delicate and beautiful that is. You know, and that's the sort of thing that gets people through, and that's the sort of thing that gives people the inspiration to stay on the earth, to be thankful every single day for the, your children, your friends, your roof over your head, to be, you know, I always think, okay, write yourself a mood diary. Write yourself something every night, but put 10 positive things that you've got to be grateful for at the end, you know? So keep that uplifting. And why do you want to be here? Why do you still want to be on your planet, this planet? Your body's telling you that you're on your way out. So now you've got to convince yourself and your body that you want to stay.
It's interesting you just mentioned, you know, about I guess journaling or scribbling notes to yourself. How important do you think that kind of dialogue is? That sort of honest conversation with yourself is, and in terms of keeping that real positive polarity. If you know, once you get hold of it.
To me, I would say it's a form of expression. A lot of people struggle to express themselves. So if they can write down what they're thinking or feeling, and knowing that not many other people will read it, they can be more honest. So that means that energy can get flowing again. And then they can also see improvements or where they're not doing so well. And they can also see patterns and triggers within certain things that are, you know, bring their moods down.
And do you think that I guess it changes the relationship that one has with yourself in terms of empowering yourself or even opening that dialogue when you say, you know, if you actually write a list of things that you know you find challenging or upsetting at the moment?
Yeah, well, yeah, I think so. I think as well, it's like talking, isn't it? So, you know, some people who will struggle to talk will actually find journal writing a lot more beneficial than somebody who can sit there and talk all day about however they're thinking or feeling. You know, because even writing something down can put it into perspective. It's like a form of release as well, you know, it's letting it go. And that's, you know, cutting ties is one of the biggest things that I can think of for healing. Is that we put so many ties to so many things, so many situations. You can think of a certain situation and it can give you butterflies and make you feel really bad, you know. And then if you can learn to cut ties with love from that situation, you know, you can begin to deal with things a lot better and be able to move forward unprejudiced by your own fears and your own pulling and pushing.
And so I get, and that must be, as you said earlier, you know, in terms of stress, that must be if you can alleviate the stresses, that's again part of that cycle towards being a more empowered version of yourself.
Yeah, and that's what it's about. It's about becoming empowered and grateful to be alive, really. Even if you're not ill, it's about you have to be. You don't have to be, but when I've been through my major depression points, you know, it can be so difficult to see anything to be grateful for. I just used to start with my dog. You know, I'm grateful to have my dog. And then eventually, you know, it started expanding to even more and more things. And you begin to see more of what you've got to be grateful for and less of what you haven't got to be grateful for. Depression's a horrible thing when it gets hold, you know. And there's no light at the end of the tunnel. And you can't see the good. People suggest things to you. And it's like, no, 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 I can't do that. I don't want to do that. No, we can't, no. Yeah. You know, so it's your own journey of getting yourself out of it, and being grateful for things is a great way of doing it. It's the secret to happiness, I think.
Yeah, and often being able to have that space to accept things for yourself and not have them conditioned or not have them focused or dependent on things around you, you know, which often happens if you're, you know, very close with your partner or your family. Or
that's where the cutting ties come in. Cutting ties is one of the best moves I've ever made. And I've only seriously started cutting ties in the last year, 2 years. And myself, personally, and my ability to function as a human being in a productive way has increased tenfold. You know, I do things now for the right reasons rather than the wrong reasons. And when you've got ties to people and attachments, especially when you're in relationships or family relationships, you know, some of these ties and that could have developed when with your kid with your sister when you was 10, you know, or 6, you know, and you keep being triggered by that same event all them years ago because you've still got that tie and that attachment, and energetically it's draining. And it can cause so many problems within marriages and everything. And you say to people, you need to cut ties. They automatically think loss, abandonment, separation. They don't actually realize that cutting ties means that you're both free to be yourselves, to be able to love.
So do you think it's a vital thing to be able to look at the relationships that you have around with fresh perspectives on a regular basis so that they are, you know, what you'd like them to be, or growing in the way that you'd like them to grow, or if they're something which is outmoded and outdated from a time and a place that isn't here and now?
Yeah, without a doubt, you know, and it's so easy, you know, if you think about it, some people that you meet and you don't get on with, you remember the fact that you don't get on with them. Every time you meet them, you don't get on, then you just know that you just don't get on. And everyone will think, oh, I've never got on with that person. That's just the way it's always been. And it's because you put that tie probably there in the first time you ever met. Whereas if you can keep that ties cut and treat people afresh each time you meet them, then you're both given the opportunity to be who you truly are in the moment and to develop from there. You know, how can a relationship develop if you're just always clinging on to the past? It can become very stagnant, and a lot of your problems can be just dragged from one moment to the next. And that's what a lot of people do, and they'll argue over the exact same thing without even realizing that it's because of the energetic ties.
Yeah, and I think people, you know, they like to extricate responsibility a lot for the things they do, you know, like, well, they're, you know, like, say, you know, religion or, you know, like politics or whatever. It's always this external other rather than, you know, like you were saying before, responsibility.
Oh, yeah, totally. Taking responsibility is the first step in all of this, really. Loving yourself and taking responsibility. And like I said, it's not always easy to take responsibility, you know. Sometimes you have to take responsibility. I've had anxiety, depression, and because of my anxiety, Paul's put about lying. Sometimes I do lie a bit. Sometimes I'll get a bit panicked and I sort of try and wiggle out of things because I think I'm going to get in trouble, and you know, and I try and manipulate the situation to get myself out of these things. And by becoming aware and taking responsibility of those things, it means that I do them less and less, and it means that I'm not so anxious.
Yeah, and I guess, you know, when that happens, your system isn't as stressed because, you know, you can be at peace with, you know, the 15% cock up that as human beings we often generally have somewhere around there. And you know, do you think that actually, you know, in terms of our environment, as Jimmy said, and some of the sort of programming habits that we get, that we stress ourselves and we inflict it upon ourselves, and it, because of that, we don't actually want to think that we can change that?
Yeah, people think that they can't change. I've heard people say, I'm angry, that's just... blank, and I really do struggle in the moment to remain in the moment or to even be there. You know, but like I said, the more I become aware of myself and my self-worth, my self-love, and have love for myself, the stronger I feel, the less likely it is for me to go into a position of anxiety.
And so I guess by being aware, and the more we think about things, the places that we like and the things that can set off those trigger and take responsibility for, the less likely we are to find ourselves in those situations feeling in that way.
Well, yeah, I always tell you, have to remind myself, I'm actually all right. I might make a few fuck ups or mess up a little bit here, or I might upset people there and everywhere, but I'm actually an all right person. I'm the type, I will look at myself, I will take responsibility for myself, and I will do what I can to rectify anything that needs that doing. You know, it's part of what life's about for me, you know.
Yeah, and of course, you know, being a co-conspirator is and helping people, you know, make things happen and make things change is, you know, it seems that everybody here at Dark City, seems to do. It seems that they have a little bit more that they want to give away and share, so that people can use the amazing tool here of communicating and doing that in a real way, you know. So, what have you been doing yourself? I know you've got a talk lined up later this year, what else have you been scheming away at? To make some of your dreams come into reality.
Well, I've got that my talk. I'm going to be at the Radical Herb Gathering. I can't remember the date of it now. I think it's June. First weekend of June. Yeah, I'm going to be doing a talk there, a workshop there, probably a couple of hour workshop on cannabis medicine in the UK. What it's like for people in the UK, you know, with cancer, who want to use cannabis. So I'm going to be doing that. Obviously, I'm doing my work with Dark City and Dark City Radio. I haven't done a show for quite a while, but I was actually thinking about it today and bringing back the I Am show. I was thinking about maybe doing it in 6 weeks on and then a little bit of time off and then 6 weeks on again, because I learned so much from those shows, you know, as well. And I think it's a great platform for others to come on to. And I've got a few people lined up for guests maybe. So I'm thinking about bringing that back. But Dark Seat Compassion Club, there's been loads going on with that. It's amazing really what's been happening over there in Spain, and all the stuff with green seeds as well, Green Seed Alicante. I'm really enjoying going down there when I go over to Spain and working with those guys. They're a great bunch of people down there, and the medical side and at Green Seed is just coming on leaps and bounds, and we're getting a lot of inquiries there now as well. So hopefully I will be able to be over in Spain, hopefully, you know, maybe by the end of summer or something. I don't know, I haven't got a date or anything on it, but that's what ultimately I would like to see myself progressing to.
And that, I mean, we were lucky to have Paul Hayden come on when we did our Who Is the Bunker show, and he told us some of the great work that's been going on there. And it really does expose some of the ridiculousness of the cannabis laws in this country, where people have to be medical refugees to go to other countries to get treatments that not just cancer, but are effective for people with epilepsy, seizures, and MS, so the work that is going on there is very important, not just for the people that are being empowered and have a better quality of life, but all the people that can't yet get out there and have that better quality of life. So that's great work. I've never heard of the Radical Herbalism Gathering before. Can you tell us a little bit about that in Shrewsbury, where you'll be doing your workshop?
Yeah, well, it's been running for about, I'm not very good with dates and years, but it's been running since, was it before I went to Australia? I think it's been running for about 6 years, let's say 6 years, but you can double check that. Honestly, don't go by anything I say about time-wise, because I don't really do time very well. And it's basically where lots of workshops are held, and I think it came around about really when the Labour government was in power and they wanted to change herbalism. You know, they was bringing on all these restrictions that you can't be practicing this, Nick. Because as it stands, you don't need a qualification to actually practice as a practitioner for herbalism. You can just call yourself a complementary therapist, which is basically what I am. A lot of people learn is through apprenticeships. You know, they learn off other other herbalists, and it's about keeping the actual spirit of that alive as well, you know, and giving people a place to come and keep herbalism alive.
And that's a vital thing actually these days, because with that legislation, a large number of natural substances that people had used for many, many years suddenly became much harder to get hold of in your high street or from your, you know, local naturalist store. So to be able to, you know, offer people alternative options that make something better than pharmacology is a really, really vital thing. So that sounds like it's a definitely an event worth catching.
Oh, without a doubt. You'll learn loads. There's stuff for everyone. There's all sorts of different herbalists as well. So, you know, you'll have your hippie type of herbalist. You'll have your more sort of pharmaceutical type of herbalist. There's a whole broad spectrum of different people there, you know, community herbalism, you know, different approaches to healthcare, sustainability, wildcrafting, practical skills, health and social justice. And so it's got a lot about people like me who haven't been taught to be a practitioner necessarily through the conventional methods. It's basically about people like me as well. You know, there's a lot of self-taught and people that have been taught by other people there as well. So there's a whole selection of different people breaking the molds of what society wants from the herbal world, if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I guess I'm being responsive to the people and as you most importantly said, make sure that the knowledge and the understanding isn't lost. And that's something which is very easy to happen in today's media and for things to be drowned out, especially as we've discussed on the bunker before, when pharmaceutical companies have private intelligence agencies working for their interests. That's something that people who have an interest in keeping that herbal knowledge alive, I'm glad that they're organising events like that. And do you think that is, especially with cannabis, do you think the way the media engages with herbalism versus the pharmaceutical industry, there is an importance for independent media to look at the subject?
I think time for people, independent media, to look at the subject of what? Oh, excuse me, I got distracted again. Can you
repeat it? I guess in terms of the way, you know, the pharmaceutical treatments and natural herbal treatments are presented to the public.
Mm-hmm.
Because it seems the mainstream media has a very heavy bias towards the spin of pharmaceutical companies.
Yeah, they do seem to have a spin. But like I say, it all seems to me to be sort of tailored and catered a certain way, the mainstream media, you know. I don't really pay much attention to the mainstream media myself, but it kind of scaremongers a lot about herbalism and the traditional ways of doing things, you know, and I think there's a place for everything, and it would be really lovely if the mainstream media could actually incorporate that as well, you know, see that there is a place for everything, you know, there's a place for herbalism as well.
I would agree totally, but I mean, I think it's a pretty kind of logical kind of product of monetizing health. You know, like it's a really scary thing when people's welfare and people's physical well-being is, you know, dependent upon their monetary value to a system that doesn't actually really accommodate for positive outcomes. It actually makes money from keeping people in the negative. Do you get what I mean?
Well, I see what you're saying, but the health industry is a money making business. It has to be a self sustaining business. I do believe it should be run as a non profit. What does sort of I think, you know, you go to the hospital and you can end up with thousands of pounds worth of a bill. So the hospital and the NHS is being billed this. You know, how much does it cost for a scan? You know, well, somewhere along the line, some people are making a hell of a lot of money out of stuff. But I'm not really quite sure about the ins and outs of how it all works. You know, all I know is it's phenomenal, you know, amount of money. Drugs cost a phenomenal amount of money. And I appreciate that it does take a lot of man hours to research and to discover a drug. And, you know, to actually box it and bring it onto the shelf costs a hell of a lot of money as well. And I understand that they need to recuperate that money, obviously, just the same as any other industry. But I, you know, it's a sad day and age when people's health does come down to money, but it does in the private sector as well. You know, if you want cannabis, you have to pay money. You know, it's the way the world is at the moment, and it's.
Yeah, I was going to say, I'd really love to see a healthcare system where profit wasn't there, like it was a not-for-profit thing where the money is ploughed back in for the research, for paying people, for paying for the equipment, but people weren't making huge amounts of profit out of people being sick. You know, that to me would make a lot of sense, but obviously when people are already in that position, they don't want to give it up.
No. I think too many people want to make too much money, and I think... this pushing of certain things gives everybody a bad name, you know, and it puts mistrust. And once mistrust is there, it stems, it grows, doesn't it? You know.
Yeah, I think that's a problem that we've seen it in some cases where we've reported here on the Bunker Show before about drug companies bribing doctors to prescribe drugs that don't need to be prescribed.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, when you have a situation where that can happen, it does corrode system in trust in the health system. So
yes.
It's, and again, I think wherever there's a lack of trust, the more people can take personal responsibility and be better informed about exactly, you know, whether that option is right for them, mm-hmm. then hopefully the safer and healthier they can be.
The pharmaceutical industry doesn't do itself any favors. Like, for example, you know, You get branded drugs, and those drugs can be copied and made more cheaply. But the pharmaceutical industry that has the branded drug often tries to prevent the fake drug, so to speak, the same drug but different, cheaperly made, from being marketed. And it doesn't necessarily have such a dramatic effect to us, but in countries like Africa and that, this is a massive. And you actually have a lot of doctors petitioning and everything against this, you know. So there's good and bad in every industry. And I think it's important that we do remember that as well, that there's good and bad in every industry, you know.
Yeah, I mean, that's where, you know, copyright law and, you know, intellectual property law has been used in an almost brutal fashion. You know, like, you've seen that globally, and it'd be interesting to see some sort of answer to that. I mean, what do you see as being sort of the solution to the overall problem of the solutions to problems being owned as property?
Let go of possession. People need to let go of possession, and that I always see things more on an individual scale rather than a global scale, and I think that's how they change. When we can learn to stop being so possessive over things ourselves, then we can better be able to answer that. And until we stop being possessive over partners, cars, jobs, people kill for objects. You know?
Yeah, and ideas, you know, like ideas. People will kill for those just as readily.
It's easy to look at the government and those in power and say, well, this is what they're doing this, and forget, again, it's a distraction. You forget where you are or where other people are around you. You know, I mainly work on a personal level, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. It can be, and people can throw their lives into a huge distraction when actually they're not taking care of themselves and being the best version of them they can be to bring about the change they want to see.
Exactly.
Sorry, my voice is going a bit.
No, I was thinking of the song, you know, like Be the Change. You know the one. Fabrice, you know the one. Oh, you know the song that they use at the end of the Bill Hicks movie? You know, like, if you want to be the change, you know, if you want to see change.
I know the song. Yeah.
This is the day your life will surely change. Is that the one?
Yeah, I think that's the one. Yeah.
Anyway.
But basically, yeah, oh God, that was such a random sort of angle to go at. But it's so true. If you listen to the lyrics of the song, now, if you think about Bill Hicks, he's
if you want to change the world, first you have to change your world.
Yeah, exactly. Be the change that you want to see.
Yeah. And you know, it's great, Sarah, that I'm really glad that you're thinking about bringing back the I Am show for another run. Will it be in the same way, the same format as before? And have you got any interesting guests that you might be finding out a little bit more about on the I Am show?
My first guest will be Winnie. She's like I said, another Shambhala family member. She's on the call now with us. She's had an amazing life. When you listen to Winnie's story and what she's overcome and where she is now, you know, it's absolutely phenomenal what she has achieved. She's just been, for me, over the last wee while, she's been one of the biggest rocks and most amazing people that I've had, that's helped me get through some difficult times, you know, just by speaking her truth. And so she's going to be my first guest, Winnie. And it will be a brilliant show, and I've got so much admiration and respect for Winnie. It's unbelievable. So much love.
Brilliant. Definitely be looking forward to that.
And as we're coming to the end, I just want to say thank you. I hope to join you at the 2016 Radical Herbalism Gathering. And anyone who wants to find out about that just needs to type that into Google, don't they, and find out about that. And how would people ask you for help, Sarah, if they wanted to contact you about, you know, some of the stuff you talked about today? What would be the best way to go about that?
If it's to do with cannabis oil, then it's my work with Dark City. So you'd contact me at sarah@darkcityradio.com. Yes, so that I'm on Facebook as well, Sarah Davis. So there are two ways of contacting me, but the Dark City Compassion Club stuff is all through that email. So yeah,
brilliant. Thank you. And Andy in the chat room was saying thank you for a great show, and I really appreciate you coming on, Sarah. It's really good to hear what you got to say, and you're inspiring.
Thank you.
Yeah, I definitely second that. Very inspiring, Sarah. And you know, thanks for coming on the show and telling us a little bit more about what you get up to and the perspectives, and a little bit about what's behind the I Am show. It's been a really good show tonight, and
and you know, I have to say thank you too, Sarah, because some of the stuff that you've said has really resonated to me, you know, personally. And you know, it's just been really nice talking about something and about nothing. It's really lovely.
And our last question, just before we go, Sarah, do you have a message for the people who think they're running things upstairs here in Westminster?
Jokers. No, they've got to learn to love themselves just the same amount as everyone else, you know. Then they won't strive for power and stuff. It's the same as, you know, they've got to learn to love themselves. Yeah. You know, they're very scared people, aren't they? Very possessive, very, very much in possession, you know. And so they need to learn to let go of possession and let love, you know, cut the ties and stop causing so much trouble, you know. Have a bit of a chill, smoke some cannabis.
That's way better than stuff, isn't it?
I don't judge them. I don't.
Yeah, from my personal experience, owning things and lots of money is nowhere near as good as having a tribe around you that love you.
Exactly. That's what's important, isn't it? You know, that tribe community spirit is what we need to build. You know, we need to stop blaming them, pointing the finger at them, and just get on with it ourselves. If you want a different reality, you have to create it. You know, you can't be shouting at others to do it if you're not doing it yourself.
Yeah, it's just making them inconsequential, isn't it?
Yeah.
Thank you very much for joining us this evening, Sarah, and charge on with all that you're doing. We're just about out of time here in the Bunker Show, but stay tuned on Dark City Radio, because coming up we've got the Dark City Cannabis Compassion Club, and as always we have our Dark City replays. All that remains for me to say is good night.
Yeah. Good night, guys. Thanks for being here. Thanks to the people in the chat room for supporting us and listening to the show and joining in. And yes, thanks, Sarah, and guys in the bunker.
Yeah, it's been lovely. Thanks, Sarah. Good night.
Thank you.
And looking forward to hearing from you all next week.
Yeah, it'll be nice to see you all next week. And good night.
Good night. And stay tuned for Dark City Cannabis Compassion Club coming right up in a couple of seconds.